Okay. I was just going to ask you to tell me a little bit about each of the individual bookstores that you went to and like the environment and culture in those bookstores.
Well, there was a bookstore at one time just within walking distance of my house. And have you been to Columbia, Maryland ever?
I think so, maybe.
You know, it's probably kind of like Reston. It
okay.
Has little sort of village centers. And in my village center, there was a bookstore. And I think it was really meant for Christian books, but they had books of all sorts.
Oh, wow.
And really interesting novels. And the people there were very knowledgeable. And then half of the store, it was small, but it had a variety, you know, like it would have gardening books next to novels, next to poetry, you know, a little bit of every New York Times bestsellers. And then there was a little cafe associated with it. They had delicious little sandwiches and coffee and, you know, lattes and that kind of thing before they were cool, before Starbucks, you know.
I think that's how bookstores, too. I feel like when they started dying down a little bit, they added the coffee shops to get people into them. I feel like that was definitely a trait that they started including.
And I think, you know, they liked you to buy something and then take it over. You know, you had to buy it before you took it over to the cafe. But they had no magazines or anything like that. It was all, for the most part, hardback books. And, you know, the paperbacks were sort of the better quality, more expensive paperbacks. And, you know, it was just a wonderful place to kind of go, and that sensation of actually thumbing through a book before buying it, I think is just, it's hard to replace.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Then in... So that was in Columbia, Maryland. In Ottawa, Canada, in the early 2000s, I lived there. And just about a block and a half from my house was a small bookstore. It was probably as big as in your house, maybe your living room.
Oh, wow.
It was very big. But the aisles were narrow and, you know, books up to the ceiling. And... they carried a little bit of everything. I remember going in and trying to find a present for somebody, and, you know, I described the person, and one of the things that this couple liked, actually, was malt whiskey. And sure enough, they had a book on different kinds of malt whiskey. You know, so you could just, you know, kind of talk to a person and describe the likes and dislikes of the individual you were buying the book for, and they would run to a shelf and say, well, I think, you know, this, they'd really like such and such, you know. And they could do the same if you described a person, you know, they'd find a good poetry book or a novel if that's the kind of thing that you were looking for.
And that's awesome, because that's definitely something you don't get online or in, you know, a Borders or anything like that. You get that with a real, like, the people that own it know their bookstore, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And this bookstore was just crammed with books. It didn't really have a place where you could sit, except maybe by the front window there was, like, a little ledge, and you might be able to sit there. But, again, no magazines or anything. It just had serious books and not many, again, not many paperbacks, and the paperbacks were kind of good quality. But the one cool thing was I have a little dog, and of course, dogs were allowed in this bookstore.
Oh, awesome.
And, they kept, Ottawa is a really dog-friendly place, and they kept some dog biscuits behind the counter, and my dog would always go right behind the counter for a biscuit.
You know, that's
and
cute.
Never mind. Yeah, they were really friendly. So, you know, you get this personal attention, and then, it's just so friendly, and not, I think Borders can be sterile.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And these bookstores you're describing just feel very personal. They feel so personal, yeah. And that's something we don't really get anymore with, you know, because no one buys books at a bookstore anymore. You buy them online, and there's no one online to tell you, this sounds like a good book for you or something like that.
Well, you know, do you go to the library ever for books?
Sometimes. I mostly get my stuff online, but that's just because I don't really have time to free read.
No, I know. And when you're, especially when you're going to school, I never went to the library when I was going to school, you know. Maybe during the summers when I was off.
Yeah, exactly.
I went to college.
That's me too.
So, let's see. Another bookstore in Ottawa that I used to go to, it was, again, on a, well, Ottawa has all these little neighborhoods, and each neighborhood has its section of, like, a main street, you know, where you'll have the grocery store and smaller grocery stores, not big chain, but a little grocery, maybe a butcher shop, a small hardware store, not a Home Depot, you know, a small one. And this neighborhood had a really cool shop that sold paper and ribbons and just little knickknacks like picture frames and things like that, but mostly paper. So journals, calendars, stationery, wrapping paper, and then ribbons of all kinds. It was the coolest store. And across the street from that store was a mystery bookstore called Prime Crime.
Oh, okay. That's cute.
Very small. You know, if your mom has a big master bedroom, it was probably the biggest master bedroom. It had a counter. It had an easy chair. And it had a store dog who was always there. And, you know, and he, if you brought your dog in, they'd touch noses and stuff. He was really friendly. And if you weren't with the dog, he might come and curl up in your lap if you
Oh, how cute.
Look at some books. And, you know, because it was in Canada, it's surprising how many of the authors we read are Canadian. And they would showcase Canadian authors quite a bit, you know, so they'd have like a special display or something like that of books. And I should say, now I'm skipping over, but the other bookstore in Canada would have displays like that at times. Like, they might have a display of all different kinds of books about lighthouses.
Oh, okay.
Or they do a display of, you know, at Christmas time, Christmas books, and at Halloween time, you know, books about witches and, I don't know, the spooky stories and stuff like that. So, the first bookstore, the displays were always in the window. You know, you could see all these books, and they just really tempted you to go in. And then in Prime Crime, they had a little table set up, you know, next to the easy chair, and it always had a few books on it with a theme. And, you know, since it was crime, maybe it would be British mysteries, or especially if a new book came out by a famous British writer like Peter Robinson or, I know there are a few of them, but or they'd showcase American crime writers or they'd showcase books about, you know, Scotland or Ireland or something, you know, just geographic or, you know, those kinds of things. Or sometimes it would be mysteries written around the theme of Halloween or Christmas, you know, something like that. And they always were clever in the way that they kind of caught your eye and reeled you in. And then I told you about this Russian bookstore. It was called Viktor Kamkin, K-A-M-K-I-N. And it had every kind of Russian book that was being published.
Oh, wow.
So stuff on, you know, the Russians, the Soviets, were very oriented toward industry and that kind of thing, and they were trying to kind of industrialize their country more because they were a little bit backward at the time. And, you know, so they'd have metallurgical dictionaries, things like that, to really beautiful literature, mystery literature, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, and, you know, they'd have, like, 15 volumes of Dostoevsky, you know, from his early works to letters and diaries and that sort of thing. And it was a very complete bookstore, except that they had no books that had been smuggled out of the Soviet Union. So, for instance, have you ever heard of Alexander Solzhenitsyn?
I haven't.
He wrote books about the Soviet labor camps. One of them was called Gulag Archipelago. Another one, One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. I mean, there were books about the really horrible side of what life was like in the Soviet Union. And, of course, they had none of those books.
Books
printed in Russia and approved, you know, by the Soviet government.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, and I'm sure that was cool for you to see that side of the culture.
Oh, it was amazing. You know, I went to school in the 70s, and all of my teachers in Russian hadn't spoken Russian in their country since the 40s.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So the language had changed. I mean, it's just inconceivable now that there would be a country, like North Korea is still like this, but, I mean, it's really an outlier, that there would be a country where you're not allowed to move freely in and out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a very different time, Alyssa. And, like, for me, so Russian books, it was very, very hard to get them. And to have this treasure trove all of a sudden of Russian books, it was like being in heaven, you know. After studying Russian for 5 years and, you know, having it be such a mystery and then have these books available was amazing.
I'm sure. And that's so lucky that it was so close to you.
It was.
What are the odds? Exactly. That's crazy.
You know, they had a catalog, but this was, you know, another one of those times that I just realized that looking in the catalog was nothing like going and actually seeing the books and figuring out if they were what you wanted and what you could read.
Exactly.
So, you know, that, if anything, that would have convinced me. You know, at the time there were still bookstores kind of all over the place, but that was a very special one, an unusual situation. And then the other bookstore, which is still in existence for foreign language books.
Oh, okay.
One that I really liked, and it was near Harvard. So one semester I went to Harvard to study, and it was in the late 80s. And, you know, so I explored a lot around Harvard. And this bookstore is not at all associated with the university, but a lot of students of languages, of course, go there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have mainly French, Spanish, German, Dutch, the big European languages.
Okay.
They have a lot of. And they have current books, you know, that people are reading. Probably Scandinavian, not that much. Not that much Chinese. I don't know where people get Chinese books now.
Probably online.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, it's very interesting. The Europeans publish a lot of new books. But one thing I've learned along the way is that the Arab countries don't have a lot of writers. You know, the books they publish mm-hmm. are like the Quran and old books.
Well, speech isn't as free, right?
That's right. And, you know, like in Afghanistan, where they've been at war for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
You know, who has time to write books or publish books? They're all fighting for their lives.
Yeah.
But I went to a seminar once on Islamic culture, and this was, I want to say, about 10 years ago. It was in 2004. And one of the speakers said that there were more new books published in Finland that year than had been published in Arabic.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so many more people speak Arabic than
English. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're right, the speech isn't as free, and they're not really focused on writing books, I'm sure.
No. So, I don't know, maybe that's an interesting fact that you can, you know, kind of tuck into this somewhere. I think that I have so much enjoyed going to small bookstores and talking to the people and saying, hey, have you read this? Is it good? And, you know, a lot of times in these little bookstores, one of the things they do, I don't know, have you ever been to this, to a wine shop where they have little tags next to the bottles that say, fresh and fruity, good.
Yeah, not. Yeah, I have with my dad.
Yeah. So that's how these bookstores were. They had a little, you know, they'd have a tag on a book to say, you know, if you read so-and-so's last book, you know, you'll really love this one. Or, you know, if you like to read Peter Robinson, you're going to love to read Elizabeth George. You know, so they'd give you little hints about which books are good. And you knew that the people who worked at the cash register had read a lot of books.
That's great.
That was just fun. I'm sorry that you won't have this experience.
Yeah, they're really disappearing.
Yeah, but, you know, when I need a fix of thumbing through books and really deciding, you know, do I want to try and read something new, now I go to the library. But, you know, even the library is more and more going to e-books, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Oh, you know, and speaking of libraries, I know this isn't exactly up your alley, but I did postgraduate work at Georgetown.
Okay.
And as a postgraduate student, I could go to the Library of Congress and get a pass for the stacks.
Oh, wow.
And that's, it's just amazing, Alyssa. There's so many books and newspapers and articles, you know, journals. Mm-hmm. And doing work on Russia, and it's still, at that time, it was the Soviet Union. And all of the stuff that it was get your hands on was available in the stacks of the Library of Congress. So I spent many weekends just in those stacks, you know, gathering stuff for papers I had to write and things like that. And again, just by accident, thumbing through material, you know, you just could find things that were useful to your scholarship, you know, to the scholarly work you were doing. It was wonderful. I kind of miss those days.
I'm sure. Because they don't have all that Russian stuff at the local library, I'm sure.
Oh, no, they don't.
Exactly. So that must have been quite a treat, and you get your Russian fix.
It was. And I haven't tried to buy too many foreign language books. You know, I have enough from my olden days of studying, I guess. And now I can read newspapers online in different languages and stuff. It's quite convenient. But I do kind of miss the olden days.
There's less discovery, as you said. You can, you know, find things, and you can't really do that as much online.
Yeah, you can find things you didn't know you were looking for.
Exactly. So you described a little bit the interaction with the community, with, like, the bookstores. Can you go into a little bit more detail about that? How the bookstores, like, were in the community and personal?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly in Canada, this idea of showcasing Canadian writers was really important. And I think, you know, you could ask about a book and, you know, any kind of book. And one thing that they often did was pull you a book review. But you're more interested in how, like, would you kind of meet people at the, did you see
Yeah, like how the bookstore owners knew the people in the community and how people in the neighborhood would, you know, it's local bookstore, right? So it would have to interact with the community a little bit.
I think the one near my house was very open to having readings. You know, sometimes they would be able to get an author in or something like that.
Oh, that's cool.
And that happened in at Prime Crime at times. And the other bookstore was so small that they couldn't do those kinds of things. But, you know, when I think about it, all these little neighborhood bookstores had bulletin boards for activities that were going on in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they got to know their customers and you know, would say, oh, do you want another mystery? Or, gosh, I got this new book by a Russian author, blah, blah, blah. You know, so they did know the people who came in and, you know, like my dog knowing where the dog was.
Exactly.
It felt like home, and you know, you didn't have to go in too many times before they recognized you. And,
yeah, that's nice.
It was just sort of a comforting place to go, even when you didn't want to buy a book. You know, you were still welcome, and they certainly would ask you about your interests and order books for you if you described something that you wanted to learn about or know about.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
You know, they would find either if they didn't have it, they would know of something and order it. So, you know, I think that their contribution to the community was being like a walking encyclopedia of what was in print.
Yeah.
And what might help you. They were more like librarians than businessmen.
And that's really nice, the personal feel. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, I guess Ottawa is a town of about 800,000 people when I lived there. And, you know, that sounds like a lot, but really it was pretty small. You know, so you would kind of encounter friends in some of these places, and you know, there was this real sense of neighborhood in Ottawa.
That's
and I think
great.
We have that a little bit in Columbia too. You know, I see the same people when I walk my dog. You know, we run into each other at restaurants, that kind of thing. So, you know, you would see the proprietors of the bookstore around town, too. You know, that might remind you to go to their store or something like that. Or, hey, we just got a shipment of such and such in.
Yeah.
And encourage you to go. So, yeah, it was a place of community. And kind of a lot like you might develop a rapport if you go to a certain restaurant often, and you get to know the waiter.
You're like a regular, yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
You know, it's usually the waiters. You don't always get to know the proprietors or the cooks, except in really small places. And, you know, we have that in some places in Columbia. I don't know, do you guys have that? Are you in Ashburn?
Yeah, I'm in Ashburn. Ashburn's so big that it's kind of hard to develop that, but in certain places you can. But
yeah.
It is just a big place, you know.
That's what I would compare it to, you know, like at a restaurant when you're recognized. And it always makes you feel good.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just feels more personal. It feels like they value you as a customer and as a person.
Yep. More than Amazon, even though all my favorites, they really don't know.
Yeah, I don't think Amazon really knows you.
No.
Okay, so my last question is just your opinion on why do you think bookstores are disappearing?
Well, I guess because, you know, you can so instantly have something that you want computer. And I think we're more often going after facts than after books.
Mm-hmm.
I find that's true of myself. You know, I'm looking for some specific thing, not you know, like a fact about the French Revolution, not reading a whole book about the French Revolution.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, so I think we're more focused on that. And I think, I don't know, I still will go to Barnes & Noble,
mm-hmm,
or the library, or order a book on Amazon because of a book review that I've read.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that it replaces the bookstore for me, but it's not as...
it's not equal. Yeah. Yeah.
But I have a lot of friends who read everything on the Kindle and on an iPad or something. And I think that a lot of people really prefer that to having a book in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another factor. I think it's pretty complicated, but we're so much getting away from having books, and it's part of this whole, I think, trend toward not acquiring a lot of stuff.
That's very true. Instead of having, you know, 8 solid books, you can just have, you know, 8 files on your iPad, and you only have to carry one thing around.
Exactly. So it's maybe more practical for the modern day and everything, mm-hmm, but, you know, I guess there are a lot of books that I just like to read books. It's kind of a puzzle for me, but I do have a Kindle, and I occasionally read on the Kindle, too,
mm-hmm,
mostly when I'm traveling, but I do it mostly out of self-preservation, too, so that I'm not too much in mourning when I lose books completely.
Yeah.
So I think the day is coming.
I'm sure, but, unfortunately.
Yeah. I don't know, do you read on the Kindle mostly?
Again, I don't really have time to pleasure read, but I do prefer, like, when I have to read for class, teachers will give me PDFs, but I always have to print them out. I can't, it's really hard for me to read on a computer, and I don't know why I don't like to. I think it's because, for me, when I read, I like to write stuff, make notes, highlight, just so I understand more. So I do like to have physical...
And there's something about, you know, when I read something in a book, I can remember the part on the place on, mm-hmm, the page that I read it. But I don't have that same kind of memory with a tablet.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think I do read better. But I think I am a person that remembers when I write things down and see them and feel them. But that's awesome. Thanks for your perspective.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope it's helpful.
Oh, yes, of course.
And good luck on your paper.
Thank you.